Hello and welcome to the College Financial Ladies podcast. I'm Anne Garcia, a fee-only financial advisor and author of the College Financial Lady blog. Today we're going to talk about how students succeed or struggle with the academic transition to college. My guest is Alan Schusterman, a professor of organic chemistry at Reed College. As someone who has been teaching a hard class to smart students for decades, he's seen a lot of success and a lot of struggle. Dr. Schusterman received his BS in chemistry from Caltech and his PhD from the University of Wisconsin. And after some stints in research and some other places, he's been at Reed College for a few decades. His wife is also a chemistry PhD, and one of his two daughters has earned a PhD while the other is currently pursuing one. All by way of saying he's seen academic success and struggle from a number of lenses. So, Alan, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you. It's a privilege to be invited to talk about this.
So why don't we start? Tell me about your class. You know, who takes it? Where are they in their academic career? Where do they go from organic chemistry?
Oh, sure. My class is a second year chemistry class. So the students that I see are never freshmen as a rule. I typically get about 70 students in a year. So it's one of the larger classes at Reed College. And the students are, I would say, three quarters of them sophomores, the rest of them juniors with one or two seniors trying to fill in a requirement. The class is required for a lot of different majors. So the students I see, maybe they haven't chosen a major yet because they are just beginning their sophomore year. But they are probably interested in biology, chemistry, biochemistry, and neuroscience, environmental science. All of these students will probably wind up taking some organic chemistry, maybe even a full year of it. And I just teach the first semester. I have a colleague who handles the second semester of the class. As far as I think you asked me, where do they go with it? It's an interesting thing. Before I came to Reed College, I taught at Pomona College in Southern California. And there, almost all of my students were going off to medical school. At Reed, that is not the case. It's funny how similar colleges can be different in some key ways. And very few of my students are interested in medical school. Most of them see themselves becoming scientists in some way. At least early in their sophomore year, they're willing to keep that option open. They want to become a PhD biologist, a PhD chemist, and so on.
Excellent. So you definitely see you've worked with a range of students over the course of your career. So your class is a hard class. I mean, organic chemistry is kind of legendary, even among people who never come close to it. Are there any commonalities you see among students who succeed in your class or among those who struggle?
Yes, there are. I mean, first, they all approach the class with a great deal of uncertainty and apprehension.
For obvious reasons.
Yes. I think the legend is justified. I sometimes go off on a tangent and talk to students about what makes a class hard, and some of their ideas about what makes organic chemistry hard are not well-founded. But what all students seem to have in common is first that initial apprehension, and then the fact that they're all smart. I see very, very few students who can't get through the class successfully, you know, just for one reason or another. It may be circumstances beyond their control, that they can't devote themselves to the class in the way that will enable success. So the students who succeed, you know, get good grades, some of them tell me, oh, you know, it wasn't that hard to do. But oftentimes what they're hiding from me or what they are not thinking about is that they studied all summer for the class before they even started it. Other students will tell me, yeah, I succeeded in your class, but man, it was murder every day. I always had work to do for your class. And they did it. The students who don't succeed for one reason or another usually have some other competing thing that keeps them from doing the work. Maybe they care about another class more. Maybe there are some issues in their lives. All perfectly valid reasons. And that's just the way life goes. Sometimes they come back to it for a second shot at it, and I'll see a student who struggled really do very well the second time around.
Well, that's always good to hear that there's a chance for redemption even in the world of
Oh,
chemistry.
absolutely. Absolutely.
So my kids always tell me that one of the biggest challenges that they found in transitioning from high school to college was sort of that flip-flop of how your time gets divided. You know, in high school, the bulk of your time is in class, and then you have some homework, but usually you've even started that in class, and you're really just finishing it. In college, students spend far less time in class and far more time studying on their own. Are there things that current high school students can be doing now to prepare themselves for that switch?
Wow, that is a really interesting observation your children have made. I haven't been a
I
high
think it
school.
had something to do with, you know, like not having classes start until 10 o'clock in the morning or
Right. I haven't been a high school student in a long time, but when I think back to it, I think they're spot on that high school fills up your day, right? You get there at 8, you leave at 3. Maybe you have extracurricular activities that schedule the rest of your time. But Monday through Friday, it's that 8 to 3 grind. College schedules are completely different. A class might meet only 3 times a week or even only twice a week, usually for 3 hours, though. And there are a lot of gaps in the schedule. A student might be in classes only 15 to 20 hours a week. And so the students really have a lot of time on their hands, and they have to figure out how to use that well. So I guess, and the other part of it is, so what is the expectation around that time? And as your children said, college teachers don't really feel like they're having the students do a lot of learning in class. We might do some, but what we're really doing is pointing out what needs to be learned outside of class. And so I don't know. This isn't going to satisfy anybody. We're not going to be able to change high school. So that process of being in charge of your own time is not going to sink in very easily while you're a high school student. And also that process of having most of the learning being put on your shoulders, rather than having it happen in the class, that's also a hard thing to do. But there are ways of doing it. There are things that high school students can do, that give them that college-like feel. You know, I'm sure that many people have hobbies that, you know, they've taken up that aren't supported by any class, and they've invested themselves in learning, you know, how to play a musical instrument, you know, throw a frisbee, you know, whatever it is, make movies to send to their friends, you know, over the internet. You know, they taught themselves. So, and yet if they reflect on it, they'll realize they didn't completely teach themselves. Maybe they found instructions online, maybe they watched a video where someone said, here's how you do this. And then they use that as a foundation to go forward. And that's really what college students have to do. They have to manage their time well, and they have to realize that what they're being given are pointers and maybe schedules too. You know, like that we're going to have an exam in 2 weeks, you know, on this material. Well, don't wait until the night before to start studying that. That's not going to work. I often tell my students there's a big difference between the biological computer we call your brain and the laptop computer that you carry around with you everywhere in your backpack. One of them you can plug a USB drive into and it suddenly got smarter. The other one doesn't work that way.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you see these things outside of the classroom as being sort of keys to develop the skills that will carry you in your academic career.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the learning happens mostly outside the classroom, and that studying is the process by which we learn. So, you know, a really smart student, all of my students are really smart, you know, they are used to just paying attention to what the teacher is saying in high school, and then leaving and saying, well, I learned that now. And it doesn't work that way in organic chemistry. It's more like a foreign language or something like that. You could listen to people talk in another language, but you wouldn't learn it just by being in their presence for half an hour a day or something like that. You would need to engage with it. You would need to find out what the rules of the game are and practice them and do that, so that you can get yourself into the conversation, you know, and participate. And that's what studying is about. And it's also about self-assessment, you know, looking at, am I actually learning? Is my studying helping me or not? And if it isn't taking me to where I got to go, how can I get more help? And students, oftentimes struggling students, are the ones who wait a long time to get help. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point, especially when you're talking about smart kids who are struggling, because so many times these kids have never struggled academically, and their initial response when they get that first B or even C or even something other than a B or a C or an A is that they're in the wrong area. You know, they're doing the wrong thing. They shouldn't be in chemistry or engineering or whatever the case may be, where it's really not so much an intelligence gap as a skills gap.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a skills gap for sure. And I would also say they're being hobbled by the self-image that they've built up around themselves over the past, you know, 18 years. I encountered this when I got to college. I got there. I had never had to work particularly hard in high school. And so I just thought of myself as naturally the leader of the pack. And all of a sudden, I found that there were plenty of people who were better prepared than me. Everybody was just as smart as me. And I wasn't leader of the pack. And in fact, sometimes I didn't even know where the pack had gone. but what I gradually had to do was let go of that self-image, because that self-image also, you know, would maybe keep me from getting help. You know, I might think, well, people like me don't need to go to the professor during office hours and ask questions. You know, people like me don't need to check in with tutors or other classmates and say, can you tell me how you got this answer? Something like that. I should be able to do it all on my own because I'm a person like me. And that self-image can almost be crippling. I would say.
Well, and I think. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
No, that's all right. I'll pause there.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, you know, the whole transition out of high school is in many ways, you know, particularly for kids who are applying to top schools like the Reeds of the world, it's this process of being as close to perfect as you possibly can be.
Yep.
And then going to college is sort of dissembling that perfection and building something new.
Very well said. very well said. I've listened to so many opening day speeches from our administration and I've attended these at other colleges too, where when they welcome the parents and students, they tell them how wonderful they are. And, you know, they are. They deserve to hear that. But that doesn't mean that what happens on day one of the class is going to treat every student equally, and it typically doesn't. And so students have to see college not just as something that tells them how wonderful they are, but something that rather says, here's how wonderful you can become, and here's a 4-year process for growing and opportunities to learn things. And it really doesn't matter whether you start at as leader of the pack or the back of the pack. The point is that you have all this time in which that if you use it well, use it energetically, you're going to grow. You're going to find yourself a brand new person when you graduate from this school that you wouldn't recognize the freshman who entered.
Yeah. Well, I remember one of the schools that my daughter and I visited, the admissions person, when he was doing the presentation, he said, you're all here trying to figure out if this is a fit for you, but the whole purpose of an education is to get outside of
Yes.
that fit. So there's definitely some growth that goes on, and one should expect some challenge and some discomfort over the coming 4 years. So college has changed a lot since you and I and other parents of current students attended. One big change is that schools are really focused on getting students to graduate. We always crack up. My husband went to University of Michigan, and at his orientation, they basically said, look to the left, look to the right. One of the three of you isn't going to be here at
Oh,
graduation. And that those days are over.
Yes. Yes.
And in particular because, with the cost of college having gone up so much, there's this huge, colleges need to demonstrate that that students coming in are going to leave with a degree at some point. So, knowing that every school is different, can you talk about some of the institutional resources that you see available to students to help them succeed? I mean, you mentioned professor office hours and tutoring, which seem to be pretty broadly available on campuses these days. But, what should, A, obviously it's on the students to find the resources themselves, but when they come, are tearfully reaching out to their parents about how they're failing and horrible and whatnot. I'm guessing there are probably some resources that we could be aware of that we could be pointing our kids to as
Yeah,
well.
and that's a great question, and you're spot on about the observation that colleges are now prioritizing getting every student through in ways that we never did before. And we're still learning how to do that. We're learning that there are all kinds of obstacles and hindrances to students from different cultural backgrounds, students from foreign countries where English might not be the first language, students from different social economic status who have arrived at the same college, but with very different modes of preparation, very different life struggles to get there. And colleges are learning that, one size fits all office hours, one size fits all tutoring is not necessarily going to serve the needs of all these students. So, the list of resources that colleges have are getting pretty long, and I doubt that I could do justice to them right here. But one of the things that I would say is first off, to get over the notion that getting help is a sign of weakness. Students have to allow themselves to feel their vulnerability and to speak about it and to share it. And I have to say that many of the students that come to my office hours, just as an example, are the best students in the class. They stick their head in the door and they say, "Hey, I'd like to confirm these four answers and the way I think about this with you." Great. And then I'll get another student who says, I didn't, you talked about this material yesterday, and I did not, I must have spaced on it during lecture, but I don't know what you're going, where you're going with that. Can you go over it again with me? And that's great too. The point is that I'm available to everybody, and I think every professor feels that way. Tutoring works the same way. We have a multicultural center on our campus. We have a Center for Life Beyond Reed to help students think about what their steps after graduation might be. There are all kinds of things.
And unlike your high school guidance counselor who's working with 400 other students, they actually have the focus
Yes,
to.
they have the professional training and resources to really be spot on about this. And this is even true of our health and counseling center. Students arrive and they get ill and they think, oh, I'm just supposed to suck it up and go to classes anyway. Well, no, there are ways of dealing with that. Another student might have some kind of emotional trauma for any variety of reasons, something in their family, something in their dorm, something off campus at a job. And again, we have resources for helping them work their way through that. We recognize that there are a lot of contributing factors to academic success. And it isn't, academic success is not just about, oh, I'm smart, I'm stupid. To see it in those kinds of terms is really a mistake. And I would do my best to discourage anybody from looking at it that way. But here, I'm going to suggest an exercise. You've asked me a little bit about what parents can do. I would say here's something parents can do. They can sit down with their child. This doesn't have to happen before college. It can happen after the first quarter or first semester of college. And say, I hear, do you have any roommates or classmates who are struggling? And if they say, yes, they do, you can ask them, what advice, did they come to you for advice? And if they do, what advice would you give them? And see if your student has a way of thinking through how to help other people. And if they do have a good way of thinking through how to help other people, probably they'll be okay helping themselves too.
That's a great, great
Yeah.
point. And I would just add to that, because I know, you're talking about your experience at Reed, which is a small private liberal arts school. My son is at a large public university, and there's a similar set of resources there. So I think pretty much any school you go to, there are a lot of tools on
Yes.
campus to make sure you get out the other end, and a student wouldn't be on that campus if the school wasn't confident that they had the tools within themselves as well to be
That's
successful.
absolutely right. And sometimes we also recognize that a student needs a break from school. Excuse me. It doesn't immediately sit well with the student to hear that, maybe the best option right now is to take this semester off and return next semester, because they're already, emotionally committed to completing the list of courses they have for the semester. But those kinds of breaks can be terribly helpful. But knowing that school is something that you do at the right time, the airplane only can take off if there aren't other planes on the runway and if there's gas in the fuel tank, you have to find the
Yeah.
right time to do these difficult things. And school is difficult, it is challenging. And you have to have you have to be there in body and soul to make it work.
Yeah, must be present to win.
Certainly.
Yeah. So before we wrap up, just you're a former college student, you're a parent of college graduates, and you're a professor. So you've seen college from a lot of different angles. What advice would you give a student who's either approaching college or new to college that you wish you or your own kids had known sooner?
Whoa.
50 words or less. Just kidding.
Well, you know, I've already talked a little bit about self-image. I think we wear our self-image like an armor, and we hope that nothing can get through it, that you know, the picture that I carry around of myself will see me through every difficulty. That just isn't true. And that was something that I personally had to learn to let go of. Not that it doesn't come right back. It does. I build it up in new ways, but to get through college, I definitely had to put aside the person that I had been when I graduated from high school. Other things are, you know, finding support. I was used to doing everything on my own, and I was used to other people coming to me for help. And I had to turn that around and discover who are the people who could really help me, and also learn, were they providing help? You know, I could meet up with someone who was brilliant in a subject, and they could say, well, it's just a matter of A, B, and C. And I'd say, oh, okay. And I wouldn't want to say any more than that, because that was clearly what they felt to be true. But I would walk away from that meeting thinking, I don't know what they're talking about. So one of the things that, you know, I often say to students, actually I say it every year to my students, is you have to see college as an experiment. You know, you're all training to be scientists, so that idea of an experiment should speak to you, that it might go well, it might not go well, but you have to look at the results of the experiment, look at the procedure that you followed during the experiment, and then ask yourself, is this an experiment that I, an experimental protocol that I should keep following, or should I change things up? And, you know, this can apply to how you read the book, how you take notes, when you sit down to do chemistry homework, where you sit down to do the chemistry homework. You know, are you in an undistracted environment, or are you checking a Facebook page every few minutes, you know, or your phone every few minutes? You know,
students
can do this. I'm not going to make a blanket statement about what you can and can't do, but you just have to realize that your task is to learn what you can do, not what your roommate can do or the person down the hall can do. And so just realize that you're getting into this big experiment, and holding too hard to ideas and habits might keep you from trying the experiment that really works. And so that's my advice to students. And to just know that we're all rooting for you. We're all here to help. We're not here to judge you, actually. You come through the door to talk to me. I'm not thinking, oh, another sad case. That's not it at all. I'm thinking, good, they're here at last. Great. or I'm thinking, huh, I wonder what this is going to be about. Maybe they're bringing me cookies, you know.
Is that a hint?
Definitely.
Well, Alan, you know, one of the things that I most appreciate about the words of wisdom that you've shared today is that none of it has been, you need to do more homework or you need to study harder or anything like that. These are all, you know, things that are actionable and that are really respectful to the student and their abilities, and just helping them to, you know, see college in a different light. Like you said, see it as an experiment and keep trying until you find something
Absolutely.
That works.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. That is certainly the case. I tell my students at the beginning of the semester, and then again after the first exam and the second and the third exams, I said, don't evaluate your progress in terms of just the score. Think about what you want out of the class. Think about where you're going and whether what this exam shows you is what, you know, are you on track or not? for the goals that you personally have. You don't all have the same goals. Some of you are thinking you're never going to use organic chemistry again, but you just have to check off a requirement. Some of you are thinking this is going to be your lifelong pursuit. You can't have the same goals. But still, I would hope that, you mentioned studying long enough and studying hard enough. I hope that the tips that I've provided would be provide some kind of roadmap for any student to find that they can reach that point where they're studying as hard as they feel they need to study and getting the results that they want to get out of that class.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Alan Schusterman, a professor of organic chemistry at Reed College, and I hope everyone has found this as informative as I have.
Oh, thank you, Anne.
Thank you,
It's been a
Alan.
pleasure.